It happens in an instant. A flash of insight, a life-changing realization. The vista opens before you, and suddenly you become aware of a truth. There are skills out there that I never knew I needed. Possibilities for perfection that I had never imagined. New ways to challenge the human body to the greatest heights. I heard about one this week while I was driving around. The craziest feat of endurance you probably have never heard of. It happened 10 years ago in 2012. Ray Slater was a radio producer in Austin, Texas. This was just whacked out and it was all in my mind and you could almost say it was in my heart too, but I knew I could do it, he said. What was it? Beat the fist-pumping world record. Streamed online for the 17 hours and 15 minutes of fist-pumping that took Ray Slater to the top of the world. Even though he had to superglue his fingers into a fist, even when his arm went numb and just felt like a rock, he kept going. Hearing him talk about it afterward, you can hear his breathless excitement. 3,000 people watched to the end. People all over the world were cheering when he made it across the finish line. I did it. I did it. And the world was right there with me and everyone knows who I am. And if I don't have interview requests from those big shows in New York by tomorrow morning, I'll be shocked. Forever after, Ray Slater and the fist-pumping world record are tied together. And his triumph is on YouTube for eternity for all to see. And he'll always have this high point in his life to look back on. Fist pumping is the defining quality of Ray Slater. The thing you will now immediately think of every time you hear his name. And it begs the question, those 17 and a quarter hours of fist pumping now define his life. What defines ours? What is the first thing that should come to mind when we hear about Jesus? Or follower of Jesus? If you said love, that's the right answer. But today I want to hone that down to a special kind of love called grace, the undeserved favor. Love expressed generously that we do nothing to deserve. The gift of the life of God that we did not and cannot earn. And if grace is the defining quality of the Christian life, then this story of the prodigal son is the defining story of grace. It's the one that most looks into the heart of God's heart. Even though the prodigal son, in the ultimate disrespect, treats his father as if he were dead and takes half his money and runs away and wastes everything, even before that young man wakes up and realizes what he's done and what he has lost, his father is watching down the road. And even before the son can beg just to be allowed to live with the servants, his father is running towards him, clothing him in his own robes, placing his own ring on his finger, and throwing a magnificent feast. That kind of grace is the defining Jesus quality. And grace doesn't come to us as a teaspoon at a time as a reward for good behavior. It's like the Psalms describe as oil pouring over Aaron's beard, like the cup running over. And this is important. Grace does not come because we deserve it, but because grace is who God is. I'd like to tell you my favorite story about grace. This is a story that the pastor and Christian leader Tony Campolo tells in his book, The Kingdom of God is a Party. He was on a speaking tour in Hawaii, and because of the time change, he's up at 3 in the morning, and he's hungry. He writes, "Up a side street, I found a little place that was still open. I went in, took a seat on one of the stools in the counter, and waited to be served. This was one of those sleazy places that deserves the name Greasy Spoon. I did not even touch the menu. I was afraid that if I opened it, something gruesome would crawl out. But it was the only place I could find. The guy behind the counter came over and asked me, 'What do you want?' I said I wanted a cup of coffee and a donut. He poured a cup of coffee, wiped his grimy hand on his smudged apron, then he grabbed a donut off the shelf behind him. As I sat there munching on my dirty donut and sipping my coffee at 3:30 in the morning, the door of the diner suddenly swung open, and to my discomfort, in marched 8 or 9 provocative and boisterous women. It was a small place, and they sat on either side of me. Their talk was loud and crude. I felt completely out of place and was just about to make my getaway when I overheard the woman beside me say, "Tomorrow's my birthday. I'm going to be 39. Her friend responded in a nasty tone, "So what do you want from me? A birthday party? What do you want? You want me to get you a cake and sing happy birthday?" "Come on," said the woman sitting next to me. "Why do you have to be so mean? I was just telling you it was my birthday, that's all. I don't want anything from you. I mean, why should you give me a birthday party? I've never had a birthday party in my whole life. Why should I have one now?" When I heard that, I made a decision. I sat and waited until the women had left. Then I called over the guy behind the counter and I asked him, "Do they come in here every night?" "Yeah," he answered. "The one right next to me, does she come in here every night?" "Yeah," he said, "that's Agnes. Yeah, she comes in here every night. Why do you want to know?" "Because I heard her say that tomorrow's her birthday," I told him. "What do you say you and I do something about that? What do you think about us throwing a birthday party for her, right here, tomorrow night?" A cute smile slowly crossed his face, and he answered with measured delight, "That's great, I like it, that's a great idea." Calling to his wife, who did the cooking in the back room, he shouted, "Hey, come out here. This guy's got a great idea. Tomorrow's Agnes's birthday. The guy wants us to go in with him and throw a birthday party for her right here, tomorrow night." Jane, the cook, came out of the back room all bright and smiley. She said, "That's wonderful. You know, Agnes is one of those people who's really nice and kind, no matter how she makes her living. Nobody does anything nice and kind for her." "Look," I told them, "if it's okay with you, I'll get back here tomorrow morning about 2:30 and decorate the place. I'll even get a birthday cake." "No way," said Harry. That was his name. "The birthday cake's my thing. I'll make the cake." At 2:30 the next morning, I was back at the diner. I'd picked up some crepe paper decorations at the store and had made a sign out of big pieces of cardboard that read, "Happy Birthday, Agnes." I decorated the diner from one end to the other. I had that diner looking good. The woman who did the cooking must have gotten the word out on the street, because by 3:15, every prostitute in Honolulu was in that place. It was wall-to-wall prostitutes, and me. At 3:30 on the dot, the door of the diner swung open, and in came Agnes and her friend. I had everybody ready, and when they came in, we all screamed, "Happy birthday!" Never have I seen a person so flabbergasted, so stunned, so shaken. Her mouth fell open. Her legs seemed to buckle a bit. Her friend grabbed her arm to steady her. And as she was led to sit on one of the stools along the counter, we all sang happy birthday to her. As we came to the end of our singing with "Happy birthday, dear Agnes, happy birthday to you," her eyes moistened. Then when the birthday cake with all the candles on it was carried out, she just lost it. Harry gruffly mumbled, "Blow out the candles, Agnes. Come on, blow out the candles. If you don't blow out the candles, I'm going to have to blow out the candles." And after an endless few seconds, when she couldn't quite get herself together, he did. Then he handed her a knife and told her, "Cut the cake, Agnes. Yo, Agnes, we all want some cake." Agnes looked down at the cake. Then, without taking her eyes off it, she slowly and softly said, "Look, Harry, is it all right with you if I mean, is it okay if I kind of, what I want to ask you is it okay if I keep the cake a little while? I mean, is it all right if we don't eat it right away?" Harry shrugged and answered, "Sure, it's okay. If you want to keep the cake, keep the cake. It's your cake. Take it home if you want to." "Can I?" she asked. Then, looking at me, she said, "I live just down the street a couple of doors. I want to take the cake home, okay? I'll be right back, honest." She got off the stool, picked up the cake, and carrying it like it was the Holy Grail, walked slowly toward the door. As we all just stood there motionless, she left. When the door closed, there was a stunned silence in the place. Not knowing what else to do, I broke the silence by saying, "What do you say we pray?" Looking back on it now, it seems more than strange for a sociologist to be leading a prayer meeting with a bunch of prostitutes in a diner in Honolulu at 3:30 in the morning. But then it just felt like the right thing to do. I prayed for Agnes. I prayed that God would deliver her from what people had done to her, that God would give her back everything that had been taken from her. When I finished, Harry leaned over the counter, and with a trace of hostility in his voice, he said, "Hey, you told me you're a sociologist. You're no sociologist. You're a preacher. What kind of church do you belong to?" In one of those moments when just the right words came, I answered, "I belong to a church that throws birthday parties for prostitutes at 3 in the morning. Harry waited for a moment and almost sneered as he answered, "No, you don't. There's no church like that. If there was, I'd join it. I'd join a church like that." Tony Campolo continues, "That's the church Jesus came to create. He came to create a church filled with people who bring celebration and joy into the lives of people who have nothing to celebrate and have no joy. To those who are brokenhearted, beaten down, to lift them up. It's the story of grace. Of a church that extends grace, that loves with no regard to how well the other person participates or whether they deserve it. A church made of people who are maybe the younger son, who have squandered what they've been given, who have lost the path, who have made harmful decisions, who have hurt others. Or the older son, who judges and is jealous and completely misses the gift right in front of him, who works to do everything right to try and earn what was already freely his. A church of grace. Because no matter who we are, or what we've done, or where we start off, God's grace is for us today. And to live into that means to grow more and more into the heart of the Father, to express our own lives more and more the grace we have been given. Grace was Jesus' defining quality, and it's becoming ours too.